Okay, Blog we're going Talk
Radio.
Here we go.
Hello. Welcome to the Psychic Funhouse, a special place
Classic.
Of exploration, love, and healing. Stay inside your ride, but prepare to expand your consciousness. Your psychic pitchmen, Michael Espinoza and Lawrence Birch, are your guides as we embark together on a magical journey. Here's the entrance, and right there is your seat. So, let's start the show.
I still like that intro.
I do, too.
It's pretty clever.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who did that? It's amazing.
It's homie. It's cheesy, but it's homie. It does the job. Anyway, hey there, listeners. Welcome to the Psychic Funhouse. It's another edition. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Mr. Michael J. Espinoza.
That would be me. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Psychic Funhouse.
Yeah, and I'm Lawrence Birch, and we also, amazingly enough, have a very, very special VIP guest on tonight with us, and that would be Elida Birch, shaman and healer. So, welcome, Elida.
That
welcome.
Shaman. Welcome,
shamanic
thank
practitioner.
You.
Shamanic
yeah,
practitioner.
Yeah, shamanic practitioner.
My apologies.
Okay. What's the difference?
Is that,
hey.
All that applause for me? Whoa.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Thank you. God,
you're famous.
So sweet.
Well, we want you to feel well.
I don't think so. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. I'm after tonight's show,
we'll
I'm sure you'll be incredibly famous. Maybe even need to get an agent.
Oh. Yeah, true. That's what it's all about, right?
Well, of course, fame and fortune. So, okay, so you're a shamanic practitioner, but not a shaman. How do you? What's the difference between the two? How do you make that distinction?
Oh well, well, a shaman, in my definition, and I think it's pretty prevalent these days. This definition, the shaman is someone who's brought up within the culture of being a shaman. So they might have the mentor who is in their family, or they might inherit the shamanic ability. But it's basically their life, and they live in a shamanic culture, which is close to the earth, close to nature, in touch with the spirits. And a shamanic practitioner, I'll explain what it is for me. You know, other people might have other definitions, but for me, being a shamanic practitioner means that I am called to work with the spirits, but I don't have that inherited, or I'm also not from a shamanic culture. So it's not something I live and breathe in that way. It's something I've had to adopt. So that's how I define it.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So is somebody looking on the outside, if they lined you up with a shaman, would they be able to tell the difference necessarily, or is it a contextual thing? Or?
Well, I think so. As I said, I think a shaman comes from a culture where they are more native to that work. So, I live in, if someone looks at me, I look like a regular Western culture person. And it's only when I open my mouth that they realize that I'm different. I think a shaman kind of, it permeates every moment, and people know immediately who they are, what they are about.
So, since you didn't grow up in that kind of environment, what was your journey to shamanism? What was that like? Did you start off you were younger knowing that was an interest, or did you have a different life and then were struck by inspiration, or what was your path exactly? Take us through that.
Okay. So I didn't even know about shamanism until I was 38 years old. And I do like to tell my story. So I'll tell the story. The reason I like to tell my story is because I believe that every person is called to work with the spirits, and if they learn how to pay attention, and if it gets, if there's something that happens that really gets their attention. So I'll tell you what it was that happened for me. Well, you know, as a kid growing up in Auburn, Massachusetts, I was a latchkey kid, and I'd often forget my keys to get back into the house after I got home from school. So I would spend that hour while I was waiting for my mother to come home. I would spend that hour on my front steps, and I would sing to the spirits. I would sing to the cat. I would sing to the flowers and the sky, and I'd do tap dances, and I had fun with it. And I was so embarrassed once when a neighbor noticed me doing this. It was like, oh, geez, I've been outed. But, you know, I put all that away, as I think many, many people do. Children, I think, have a natural opening to the spirit world that we, the Western culture, shuts down pretty quickly, especially in terms of the imagination. And I believe the imagination is the doorway to the spirit realms. And that's one of the tools that gets taken from us systematically as we grow up in this culture. So fast forward, and I was, you know, trying to figure out what to do with my life. I was in my late 30s. I'd already gone through two careers. I was a social worker and a mechanical engineer, and I was working in manufacturing. And I just, you know, I just knew something wasn't right. I was making a lot of money. I had nice friends. I liked the people at my work, though, you know, the work in particular wasn't that engrossing for me. But I just kept yearning. And finally, I met a group of women that met with the new and the full moon, which was quite radical in those days. I mean, this is the Midwest. It's the 80s. And so I was meeting with them and getting a meditation ready for one of our meetings. And as I was reading the meditation, the sound of a persistent drum beat came into my head. You know, that dun, 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 dun. And I liked it. I didn't know what it was, but I liked it, and I decided that I wanted to use it as a background to the meditation. So I started asking people if they had drums. I didn't know anyone who was using them spiritually. I just thought they were used in bands or orchestras or military. So I got a lot of weird looks, but that was okay. And so then I was still searching. I didn't know what it was all about, but that drum beat wouldn't go away. And then I got in that group of women, we used to pass around information about what was happening in our community. And one of the things that came around was a description of a workshop called The Way of the Shaman, or the Shamanic Journey. And in the text of it, and I didn't know what shamanism was, it didn't really interest me, but in the text of the flyer, it said, the drum is the heartbeat of the earth. So I said, oh, I should go and find out what this drum thing is all about. So I got in my car in early February I was in Wisconsin, it was really cold, and I drove for 5 hours to Madison, Wisconsin. I got there 5 minutes before the workshop started. And he hadn't even received my money. My tuition had gotten lost in the mail, which is a whole nother topic, like how the spirits test us sometimes, see if we're serious. But he had said that he would let me in because I said I was supposed to be there. And I got there, and I just thought those people were so strange. You know, they were dancing their animals, and they were sitting in a circle. They had drums and rattles. I had nothing. You know, I had a little notebook and a pen. I had no idea what was going on. And I thought, oh, I'll just stay one day, and I won't come back. But then someone asked, does anyone need a place to stay tonight? And I raised my hand, and it turned out that a woman offered to take me back to her place, and she didn't have a car. So I had to bring her back to the workshop the next morning. And then I thought, okay, I'll stay. And then she gifted me a book, Michael Harner, about shamanism. So I ended up staying. And I'm a really tough nut. I did not think that I was actually journeying to spirits. I thought I was, because of all my social work training in Western psychology, I thought that I was talking to my subconscious or maybe my unconscious. And it took several years before, I actually had to learn how to do soul retrievals. And when we do soul retrievals, we enter into that person's, sometimes their memories. And I was retrieving memories of traumas that they'd had. And it was at that point that I finally said, okay, I think there's something to this. And then, you know, once I finally got a hold of, got my own subconscious under control, you know, so it wasn't leading the way, but it was more just helping me and advising me. Then I was really able to go deeply into this work. So that's the story of how I got started in shamanism.
Interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like you're kind of reluctant at first, but it was the power of the sound of the drum that just kept drawing you in to go deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'm trying to think of the right word here. I think it's a healthy response to be a little bit critical of things that come in. You know, we can't just let everything in, but a discernment, I would say, is the right word here. It's good to be discerning. And that's something I often talk to my students about, or my clients, that when they start to journey and work with their own spirits, they need to be very sure to set up a relationship of trust. And they would learn how to get their answers from that spirit. And then over time, we know that we can trust that spirit. I've seen disastrous effects when people will immediately do everything their spirit initially tells them to do without finding out if that is a good spirit to work with. Because, you know, the spirits don't really have, well, they don't have an ego, but they also haven't been in a physical body for a while. So sometimes they don't realize what it takes to live on the physical plane. So we have to be discerning about some of their advice.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Do you want? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to jump in here a little bit and kind of discuss then how do you, I guess, discern what you can trust in their information and what you can't, or is there some framework that you work from then with the advice that they give you?
I think it's a step-by-step process. When we first encounter a new spirit during our journeying, well, let's say we're a beginning journeyer, and we start with a power animal that might have been brought back for us, retrieved for us by someone else, or we might have met this being spontaneously on our own shamanic journey, then we have to start asking questions, like good questions to ask are, what's your name? What's your story? And why are we working together? What particular things are we going to work together on? And then if you have some questions, you might ask. And if it sounds like good advice, then you might try it out. And if it works, then you know you have a good ally there, and you can go back and keep the process going and build up the trust.
Have you
kind of like
encountered
a new friend?
Oh, yeah, that's what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Have you encountered one that isn't helpful?
I think some of the spirits have different qualities. You know, like I have a spirit that will work with me on soul retrievals, and I have a spirit that works with me on diagnostic journeys that will tell me what it is that the client needs. So they'll point me in the direction of what healing modalities I need to use for that person. And then I have other spirits that are, I would call them more general spirits, like day-to-day. They just work with me when I'm in nature. They work with me in my home. I have little spirits that live, they're kind of, I forget the name that I call them, but they're like little minions. Yeah, that's the word, minions. and they're like almost like little cellular beings that just want to, they want to anchor in emotions. So I'll work with them to anchor emotions into my home that I want anchored. So it's a very conscious effort. But they're more, I wouldn't say they're like someone I go to for advice. That would be another type of spirit.
How many spirits do you work with? Would you say a lot?
I've really lost count. I think I have about a handful commonly that I work with in healing, my healing practice. And then I probably have another five helping spirits that I work with outside of my healing practice. And there's once one becomes a shamanic practitioner, I'm sure you can relate to this, the spirits come from everywhere. There's spirits in nature everywhere. There's spirits in the middle world that the trees want to talk, and, you know, the mushrooms want to talk, and the flowers want to talk, and the birds, you know, everybody wants to get in on the action. So kind of hard to limit it, but as far as a personal relationship, it would probably be about 10 total, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Can you talk about the relationship of imagination to shamanism a little bit? Because I know sometimes that, you know, it's confusing for people, and you alluded to that a little bit when you were talking about your journey.
Oh, yeah. And this is something that I did not understand, even though I think when I first learned about the shamanic journey, my teachers told me this, but it was like my brain couldn't absorb it because I wasn't ready for it. So the idea is this, that the imagination is the doorway to the spirit world. And in many indigenous cultures, from what I've been told, there is no word for imagination. That everything that comes to them that we would call the imagination, that might be a creative thought, they would say is a gift from the spirit. So then we go back to that word to be inspired, to be inspirited is how we, you know, the breakdown of that word. So the imagination, once I think about it like greasing the skids, you know. So if we're wanting to journey, and we start in our place in nature, in our mind, you know, and we open up all of our senses so we can get ourselves there as much as possible, then we start to allow our imagination to flow freely. And we might look for an opening into the earth, or we might look for a way to go up to the lower world or the upper world. And at some point in that journey, it takes off on its own. And things start to happen that are not part of what we are imagining. And so that is why I say it's the doorway to the spirit realm, because it really does help us to get into that altered state of consciousness, much like when we're in that that twilight zone between sleep and wakefulness, that realm. And many times when I journey, I feel like I'm right on the edge of consciousness, you know, where I could go. If I just went one bit deeper, I would fall into a sleep.
Of that alpha state. So what do you tell beginning students who are having challenges with that, who either can't get their imagination geared up to open that doorway, or feel, you know, suspicious that it's all just imagination and they're making everything up?
Well, I tell them just what I told you. And it's important that they persist, that they experiment with it, and that they be curious, because curiosity, I think, is also one of the most powerful learning tools we have. So curiosity implies, you know, I'm open, I'm inquiring, but I haven't really stepped fully, you know, I haven't jumped off the cliff into the unknown abyss. So most people, when they hear that, they're willing to hang in there with it and experiment with it. And oftentimes, you know, when we're teaching people to journey, it's usually in a circle format or a group format. And when they start to hear other people's experiences, it helps them to open up their mind to the possibilities of what's out there for them. And get out of their box.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So what are so you also have had a healing practice for a number of years. Do you have a pattern of what people come to see you for healing, or does it vary quite a bit? Or
I think there's three main reasons people come to see me. The first would be that they want to be more in touch with their soul, with their path of their soul, their spiritual connection. And, of course, those people benefit greatly from learning how to journey, because then they are able to work with their own spirit helpers who advise them on how to step onto that path and flourish in that way. The second reason that people come to see me is because they're ill and they haven't been able to address their illness through Western medicine or even alternative medicines. They've got some kind of mysterious malady that doesn't respond well when it should be responding well to treatment. And those people tend to have, I speak in generalities here because I never really know what's going on with them until I journey to my spirit helpers. Oftentimes those people have something in their body that doesn't belong there on a spiritual level, like a spiritual intrusion. And they also might have soul loss or power loss. And soul loss is, I think, of all the reasons that people come to see me, that would be the top one, that people who have feel that they've lost a part of themselves, that they've never been the same since they were in an accident or since they had something traumatic happen to them, and they just can't get back to, or even they feel stuck and can't move forward in their life. They just can't get back to feeling like themselves. And they'll often put their hands right over their heart when they say that, and they'll say, I feel an emptiness inside me. And that is a good symptom of soul loss. So that would be another reason that people come to see me.
So could you talk a little bit more about what the soul is and what soul loss is? Is it something like PTSD that people have, or is it something deeper, or what is soul loss exactly? And what's your understanding of what the soul is or might be?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because there's many definitions of the soul. So in the work that I do, we define the soul as vital life force. And when some of that vitality leaves us, then it becomes an issue because people feel stuck. And they might feel that they can't move on with their life. They might feel that their resources are diminished, and they might feel that they can't open themselves up emotionally. You know, they're stuck in that way. And so, another primary symptom of soul loss would be disassociation, and that's the Western term, I think, for soul loss. And there's many, you know, PTSD, I think, is a symptom of soul loss, and certainly one component of soul loss. And my favorite thing to do with people who have complex issues, like PTSD can be very complex, is to make sure that not only are they seeing me as a shamanic practitioner, but that they're getting the care that they need from, maybe they're working with someone who does emotional freedom technique, tapping or acupuncture or all kinds. There's all kinds of other modalities that I like to make sure that they're plugged into. So, you know, we're complex beings, us humans. We have body, mind, spirit. And we need to address all of those things.
Yeah, that's true. We're definitely, you know, we get imbalanced in complex ways, and sometimes it's complicated what our healing process is going to be. Do you have any examples or stories of people that you've worked with, or just shamanic experiences you've had over your time in the shamanic field that would be worth sharing, or people might be interested in hearing, Elena?
Yeah. I'll just pull some out of my back pocket here. I remember one of my very first soul retrievals that I did way back in the early 90s was a woman who came in, and people sometimes won't tell me anything about what's going on for them. They'll just say, I need a soul retrieval. Would you do one? And I'll ask my spirits, and they'll say yes. So I did a soul retrieval for her, and it turned out that, let me mute my computer. There we go. It turned out that I saw that she had lost a part of her soul when her parents had left her in the care of a babysitter when she was 3 years old. And what I saw was that she had been dropped by the babysitter on her head. And yep. So I brought back that piece that left at that time and sent her on her way. And then about a month later, she came back as a support person for another friend who was getting a soul retrieval. And she said to me, oh, by the way, I am deaf. I used to be deaf in my left ear. And just a few weeks ago, I noticed that I could hear out of my left ear. And what I believe happened was that when she was dropped, the babysitter was not comfortable telling the parents that she dropped the baby. So they'd never shared that information, but that is what had caused her deafness. And bringing back the soul essence brought back her hearing. Now that's a dramatic story with soul retrieval. And not all soul retrievals have such dramatic results, but certainly there are those times when miracles emerge from that kind of healing work. And I'm trying to think of other things I can tell you. I've had many instances, and I think this one's kind of interesting, when artists will come to me, and artists often get into a very difficult place in our culture because they're about creating, and they're about creating beauty, and they do it with all of their heart and soul. And oftentimes they'll lose parts of their soul because the culture doesn't recognize that, and it makes it so difficult for them to earn a living if they devote a lot of time to their art. So many times I see artists coming in who have a lot of soul loss, and oftentimes they exhibit it as an addiction. And once I had a man come to see me who was he was addicted to marijuana, and he really was struggling with it. And he had a whole marijuana farm in Southern Oregon, and he wanted to be released from that spirit. And when I journeyed, now plant spirits are really interesting because plant spirits are often very single-minded, and one of the teachings that Michael Harner gave to me so long ago was that plant spirits, they like to be the only spirit that's working with you. So that would lead to some form of addiction, right, if that's true. And in this man's case, mm-hmm. it was. When I journeyed to see what was going on with him, I saw this almost like a cocoon of smoke and darkness wrapped around him. And I contacted the marijuana spirit, who's a beautiful feminine essence. And I said, what's with this? And she said, well, he belongs to me. I said, well, no, he doesn't. and so we had quite a conversation about that. And I explained to her, you know, what was happening to him. You know, he was getting very depleted and he wouldn't be able to do this with her anymore. And that he wanted to sell the farm and, the new person could be someone that she worked with, but he had to be released. And we struck up an agreement about what kind of trade he would give for his freedom. And he had to do a ceremony, a goodbye ceremony for her. So he left, I gave him that information. I brought back some soul essence. He left and he went down to his farm and he contacted me about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months later. And he said, I went home. I did the ceremony. It was the most profound experience I'd had. I could actually see the marijuana spirit standing in front of me. And we said goodbye to each other. He put the farm on sale and it sold the next day. So he was able to leave almost immediately and start his new life. And he never smoked again.
Well,
wow.
Me?
That's really powerful.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, you know, addictions as being really a relationship you have with this plant. Can you hear us?
Did I lose you?
Still here. I don't think
so. Yeah,
there
did you hear that story? Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you hear us?
Did you hear my story? I muted my computer.
Yes.
And
yep,
okay.
We heard it. Yeah, you just heard. You just muted
okay,
it.
Okay, I just couldn't hear you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I was just saying.
Yeah.
It's an interesting concept, the idea that addiction isn't something that's just a one-way street coming from the person, but that it's co-facilitated by the plant itself wanting to maintain that single-minded relationship with somebody.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Lawrence, is that your experience with the plant spirits? Because I know you work with different plant spirits also.
Only the plants that I would say, you know, I put in the category of power plants that have, you know, either a hallucinogenic or, you know, more than just a medicinal effect, something that affects perception or awareness. They tend to just be really big personalities, and so they can kind of take over things. The earliest plant that I had a shamanic relationship with was Datura or Jimson. And, you know, if you look in the literature about Jimson weed, most of it's not really very positive because it injures people or even kills them. And people, you know, play around with it thinking they're going to get high and then they end up in this serious place. But, you know, my relationship with Datura really evolved over time, and it was something that was really, you know, it was definitely powerful, and I really was taught a lot about how to respect the power of this plant. But she definitely had a very possessive side, probably more so than any other plants that I've worked with. And once I understood, you know, where it was coming from, then I could kind of negotiate and moderate it. But I think if you're really new to this, or you don't really know what you're doing, it can be, you know, you can get upside down or imbalanced in your relationship with these plants in a hurry and not really know how to, you know, work your way out of it. For me, it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, people when they're first embracing shamanism, sometimes folks just dive right in and they do whatever the spirits tell them. And I've always been a pretty critical thinking person. So I'm never like, oh, okay, the spirits said do this. Now I'm going to do it. I'm always like, really? Do I really want to do that? Come on. Like, let's talk about this.
Right.
So my spirits are always like, oh, my God, just do it, would you? And I'm like, well, let's modify the contract here. So, so I think it really depends on the person. But, yeah, definitely, you know, I've seen a whole spectrum. Some plants are just really very gentle and very embracing in what they offer, and some are more insistent about, you know, this is, you know, this is something that's really important, and you need to partner with me on this so we can get this done. So it just depends, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, I had the ayahuasca plant tell me not to come back because she said my spirits were too strong. Upset me at the time, but she said I didn't need her. Which was sad because we'd done some really amazing, we did a depossession when I was working with her that was amazingly effective, but I don't know, not my path.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you get those messages, right, where, you know, there's a time limit on what kind of work you're going to do with a spirit, and they may not, they may not be involved with you more than just, you know, that particular person or whatever it is that you're working on, you know, and then you've got some that have been with you since the beginning. So it can really vary, as I'm sure you've experienced, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting when, you know, you have kind of the opposite, which is what you were saying with the ayahuasca story, you know, where instead of a spirit wanting really to work with you and to be noticed and to be able to, you know, have their agenda, be brought forth, you know, they're like, okay, well, time's up, you know, we've done our bit, I'm pulling back, I don't want to work with you anymore, right? Like, oh,
I think she was jealous of my other spirits is what I think. Oh. Or, you know, that's probably, I don't know if jealous is the right word. I don't know her that well, but certainly she didn't feel that there was room, you know, and that I was too strong in my own way of working with my spirits, I guess. I don't know. You know, that was about 20, 25 years ago, so it's hard. You know. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, we had a ayahuasca person on a few shows ago, Michael and I did, and they, you know, they were definitely, it was actually somebody that Rita Baxter worked with for a while, named Noam McBride. She was his assistant for years, and he's still doing it. But, you know, it was clear listening to his story with it that, you know, he had kind of done what he felt like he could with plants in an average way, and he just was the kind of person who really needed to be completely, dramatically involved in something. And I think ayahuasca came along at the right time and really fulfilled that opening that he had in need, you know, in a way that the other plants, even though he worked with them pretty deeply, just didn't meet. So I can see that. You know, there's only so much room you have to be able to work with plants that are that intense, and I think they're all, you know, pretty good about letting you know, that they need to be a priority. So, mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this might be a good time to just go around and we'll share some contact information in case people want to get in touch with you or with us for healing or to find out more about your work and what you're doing. So maybe we'll start with you, Aleta. If somebody's listening and they want to know more about your work and what you do, or maybe to get some healing from you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Okay. Well, there's lots of ways to reach me. I've got two websites and a book. So my book is called The Co-Creation Handbook, A Shamanic Guide to Creating a Better World and a More Joyful Life. And essentially it's a course in a book. It takes you through how to work with the spirits to create a life that you love. And my websites are AlaitaBirch.com. So and then my other website is about the book, and that's cocreationhandbook.com.
Okay.
And then
great.
I'm going to be starting a online class called Conscious Co-Creation in a couple of weeks, and I have a master class, the free master class called The Shamanic Craft of Co-Creation, that's happening tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific time. People want to tune in for that, they're welcome to join me for that.
Oh, okay, great. And so do they need to sign up for that in some way or contact you first, or what's the process to make that happen for them?
Yeah, they can just go to my website, and I've got a link on there for the master class.
That sounds fun. Michael, how can people get in touch with you if they want to know more about the work you do or get some healing work done?
You can go to my website, michaeljespinoza.com. You can book a pranic healing, or you can book a reading. And you can also send me a text or call me at 562-457-0457. What about you, Lawrence? How can people get a hold of you?
The easiest way is usually through the phone. You can text or call. 541-344-7534 is my number. You can send me an email, givingtree@earthlink.net. And I have a Facebook page, Giving Tree Farm Herbs. And my website is givingtreefarm.com. So Letty, you mentioned a book. Why don't you tell us something, some more about Created, and really it's got a whole kind of structure and platform around it too that can really help people engage with it, mm-hmm. right? So
yeah, so I'll just give you some background about what's going on for me with that, with the material that I put into the book. I really believe, and I think we all know it's true, is that we're in a phase shift right now. And we're either going to go up or down with our relationship to how we survive on the planet. And I believe that for everyone to contribute their unique gifts would be an amazing way to make this earth more sustainable for us. And so the book is really about how to help people bring their unique gifts forward with the advice of their wise spirit allies, because I believe so much of what we've created has been out of ego, and now we need to create out of love for humanity and out of love for the planet and for all of life. So the book is in 7 chapters, and each chapter is a week. So where the person who's reading it works through the material, and there's an audio program that you download for free from my website, and you work with the audio program too. And the major objective of the audio program is not only to introduce you to your spirit helpers, but also to help you to befriend your subconscious, which runs about 90% of your life. So if your subconscious is trying to be overly protective or shut you down or doesn't believe that you are a responsible creator, it won't help you to manifest those things that you truly, truly want to create. So that's what the book is all about. And I'll say one other thing about the book. It's done really well in the teenage market. Teenagers really love it, and I'm really inspired by that because that is a wonderful age to learn about our capabilities, about creation and how powerful we really are, and that the intention of the universe, once we set our intention, the universe conspires to help make things happen. So that's been an exciting, unexpected outcome of writing the book.
Oh, very cool. And what's the title of it again, Elena?
The Co-Creation Handbook.
Oh, okay. Nice. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a nice journey going through your book, each chapter, one chapter a week. It sounds like it's a nice journey there. Instead
yeah,
of
it is.
A course, right?
Right. Well, there is a course also that's coming up, but I find that some people are self-learners, and those people do really well with the book. Other people like to have the support of a group as they go through, and so that's why I started to teach it online. I also teach it in my home, but, you know, with the pandemic, that hasn't happened lately. And then, you know, with the group, people here get inspired by each other, and we all share the stories of what's happening to us. So that's a lot of fun.
How many groups have you had work with it so far, Elena?
Let's see. I think I've been through it about 5 different groups. Have gone through it. And then I think probably a couple thousand readers have gone through it.
Mm-hmm. It's quite a few.
Yeah. I didn't expect it to do as well as it has. It was a nice surprise. I mean, I wrote it because someone in Australia needed the book, and she invited me to come and teach the workshop. So I said, okay, I'll put together a manual that will help with the workshop, and I did that. And then after that, I realized I just needed to get it out of the book. So once I decided that, the editor showed up at my door. No kidding, front door, knock, knock, knock. I'm here to help you edit your book. And then an amazing artist showed up who did the cover design. And I think that that's been really responsible for the book doing well, because the images on the cover really evoke what the book is about.
Mm.
So it's been a beautiful experience with synchronicity, which is what? It's really the way the spirits talk to us. So it's great.
So can you share a little bit about what's inside the book? What will people experience when they start working with it?
Well, yeah. The first thing we do is we work with visioning. So often people have been shut down in terms of being able to create a vision. And I know so many people will say, what's your vision for what you want to create in your life? And they just go blank. And then I'll say, okay, what's the goal that you have for maybe the next week? And blank. So I've learned how to really chunk it down so that people become more free with how to create a vision and more loose about that. And then we also work with the concept that happiness is a fundamental choice, because many of us believe that happiness is just something that we're lucky to have, but we don't really have control over how happy we feel. And what we found through lots of research and lots of personal examples is that there are ways to create happiness for ourselves regardless of our circumstances. And it has tremendous benefits for our ability to create, because when we are able to create a happy, and I'm not talking about, oh, everything's wonderful, la, la, la. I'm talking about, a soulful happiness. When we are able to do that, then we're like a magnet for more positivity to come into our life. And people will resonate with us more, and the universe will conspire with us more. So it's an all-around good deal to be able to work on that. And that's often, that's like a whole mindset shift. And that's like in the first 7 pages of the book. So people really like that. And then we work a lot with synchronicity and how the universe is giving us messages all the time. So we learn how to recognize those messages and how to work with them. And that's a really fun chapter. And then another chapter, we talk about expanding outward and turning within. Now, we're really good in our culture about expanding outward. It's like the whole problem with capitalism is we're overly expansive, and now we're using things up and not replacing them. So we need that counterpoint, which is turning within and emptying out and being in that place of stillness where we can receive the voice of spirit and the voice of nature, so we know how to give back, how to be in reciprocity. So that's a very important aspect that we need to bring into our modern life. We talk about boundaries, boundaries in our relationships and how we work with ourselves, how we balance our work and our life. And then one of my favorite chapters is opening up our perceptions, because we all have blind spots. I mean, we all kind of trip over things without realizing they're there, and then later go, oh, hey, that was like really important, or that was a message from my spirit helpers and I didn't see it, or, you know, and I have this really, it's almost a silly example, but I'll share it. I was driving into the grocery store parking lot, and there's one part of the parking lot that's really close to the front door where everybody likes to park. So I like to park there too. So I was in a bad mood when I was driving into the parking lot, and I was saying to myself, oh, there's probably not going to be a space there. And so I got to the parking lot, and lo and behold, I couldn't see a space. And then I said, wait a minute, I am like, I've got the wrong frame of consciousness for this. I need to shift my perception, shift my mood. So I said to myself, I'm here, I'm available, and I want to see a parking space. And I kid you not, 10 feet away from me, there was an empty space that I had not seen before. I had looked at it, but I had not seen it. Hmm. Now, that's a fairly minute example of what can happen in a person's life when they open up their consciousness and allow themselves to see what they haven't seen before. But first acknowledging that we all have these blinds. I mean, we all think we're in this three-dimensional world when most of us realize at this point that we are vibrational beings, and the solid desk is not really solid, and that there's more air in here than solid. But somehow I've agreed with myself that it's solid. So there's a lot of room for miracles.
I'm a firm believer in praying for parking spaces now. Every time before I leave and go somewhere, I thank them for the parking space. Parking space, that's close by, right, where I need to go. This morning, I had to take my mom to a doctor's appointment, and we go to the center, and they have a small parking lot for this big, giant medical facility, you know, hospital plus offices, and parking is horrendous. Anyway, so thank you so much for that parking. That's going to be close to the exit, so, you know, she doesn't have a long ways to walk. And sure enough, as soon as I walked, you know, we drove into the parking lot, it was like the second space. And I was just like, thank you. Just pull her
nice.
In. Yeah. And I do that all the time now. Yeah.
Yep. Being in that state of gratitude. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but, you know, sometimes I'm not there like you, you know, you're not in a good mood or whatever.
I wasn't there, but I shifted, you know, I just said, wait a minute, this is messed up. I have to get my head on straight. And when I did, then I saw it. It was like it was there. I just wasn't seeing it.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just going to say, you know, we have a chance to go to the phones and see if our listeners have some questions for Lyda, or if they have something that's resonated with them, they want to make a comment about it or something. So, so I thought we could do that. Are we ready to open the phone lines for a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's find out. So, so what we'll do is just ask you what your name is, if you care to share that, and then also where you're calling from. And you can let us know if you have a question for our guests tonight, Alida Birch. All right. So this is area code 951. Hi there. You're on Psychic Funhouse. Yeah, with Alida Lawrence Michael.
Nathaniel calling. How you doing? It's Nathaniel from California.
Well, good. Hey, Nathaniel. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah,
is there a message from any message from spirit or spirit guide or angel or loved one coming through?
A message for you? Did you have a specific question about anything or just?
No, I would like to see what spirit's coming through with first, but
Okay. Well, let's find out.
Okay. Hi.
Michael.
Okay, so I just drew a tarot card. Would you be interested in that, Nathaniel?
The world. What
so,
is it?
it's the Six of Flames. I work with the Daughter of the Moon deck. And that's the card for play. So usually when this comes up in a reading, it means that the person, I just dropped my whole deck on the floor. It means that the
awesome.
Person needs to play more and just, not be so much in the head, but be in the heart and be like outside. So how does that fit for you?
That would fit, that would fit good. Would it be like playing an instrument, playing guitar or something?
It could very well be, if you enjoy it. The point is to get back into having fun. So here you are in the psychic fun house, that's perfect.
Right.
Anything that brings a smile to your face and you really enjoy, Do you play an instrument?
Yes, I do.
What do you play?
A guitar and other instruments, drums and bass and some other instruments.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anything else?
Do you have anything coming through, Michael?
No, not today. I don't. Sorry.
Well.
So the only other thing I'd say, Nathaniel, I have one more thing to say, is that the Two of Cups came up, and that's that usually indicates, in my deck at least, it usually indicates that there's some circular thinking that leads you into feeling negative sometimes, and that it would help you to find ways to get out of that that loop of thinking that you tend to get into. Does that make sense to you?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, well, thanks for calling, Nathaniel. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
We'll talk to you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right,
bye.
Take care.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah, he's one of our regular callers. We often hear from him.
That's
yeah. Cool. So a lot of energy in your cards. They're jumping around there, it sounds like.
I know. Well, they're round. They're kind of hard to hold on to.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they slip away sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's, that's a common theme for people. It seems like, especially in the last year or two, is how to get out of your head or get out of whatever it is that's really stressing you out and just play a little bit or try to just have a good, a good time, whatever that means these days.
There's been a lot of
really
there's been a lot of feeding of fear lately in our culture, in social media, politics. The pandemic. I remember once I had a client come to see me from Canada, And when we were done with the session, I said, well, what's it like to live there? And she said, we don't have fear like you guys do. And it was a very sobering experience. Like they
wow.
they have a whole different take on their world than we do. We live in fear in our in the U.S.
That's probably why they're so polite.
Yeah. For what?
Exactly.
So nice to us. We know we're being stressed.
So what's what you know, Lida? We were talking about your process with shamanism in your book. What do you think the role is for modern shamans and shamanic practitioners in today's world? You know, obviously they did all sorts of things. You know, back in the day,
mm-hmm.
but what place or value do they hold in our society today? Would you say?
Well, the shamans have always been here to remind us of who we truly are, that we are beyond the physical, that we have a spirit, and that there are powerful spirits in our world that will work with us. And I think as we have moved into the 21st century and our understanding of how to work spiritually, we're coming to understand that all of those gifts that we as humans have, we really need to be in reciprocity with those gifts. I mean, we've been given so much as a human race, and it's time for us to give back to the earth. It's time for us to come back into balance and to work consciously with the spirits, to do that in a way that makes sense for the earth and makes sense for us. I mean, because she's going to survive, right? The earth is not going to go anywhere, but the human race, we may not survive if we don't get our act together. So that's, it's a big role, I think. And not only shamans have that, but I think every person has to step up into that consciousness. Well, when people talk about higher vibration, I never really understood what's a vibration, you know, but it's really understanding that we are a part of a great ecosystem, and we've divorced ourselves from that ecosystem in very destructive ways, and it's really had some bad ramifications for nature. So we can turn that around. We have a lot of brilliance within people, a lot of innovation, a lot of ability to work together and solve problems. We're understanding the value of diversity, that sometimes the best answers and the best creative ideas come out of people that are on the fringes of our culture that we ordinarily don't pay attention to because they're scary and threatening to us, our way of being. But we have to open up, open up to those blind spots. We have to open up to all these possibilities and really figure out what's gonna make things work.
So what advice do you have for people that are, you know, wanting to do that, or, you know, they have a sense or some understanding that, you know, that they want to be part of the solution, but they're not sure what direction to go into? What kind of tools or steps could they take to move forward?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. Number one, hold a vision for a sustainable world. And really develop that vision and put your heart and soul into it. And number two, cut yourself loose from negative thinking, because negative thinking, you know, oh, things aren't going to work out, or, you know, this is bad or that's bad. Negative thinking is an energy, and it takes away the power of what you want to create. So there's a lot, I do a lot of work with people around the power of words. And that's a really, really important aspect to get straight, because when we speak, we're really indicating what's going on internally. So if we can change the way we speak, we can change our internal process. You know, much like, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? It doesn't matter. You can change one and the other one will follow. And so that would be number two. And then number three is really work in your local community, no matter what kind of community you're in, whether you're living out in farmland or whether you're living in the middle of the city. There's ways to work within your local community. Reach out and help people. Help the animals. Pay attention to where your sustenance comes from. Does your food come from? Is it locally sourced and is it really healthy for you? Are you really feeding your body in a good way? Because your body has to maintain and take care of you. And when we do those things, when we support an agriculture that's sustainable, then that creates food that's truly, truly healthy for the human body. And so much of our food right now is not, because it's been infiltrated with glyphosate, Roundup, all these pesticides, and they aren't really working for the body. I mean, we can't absorb it, number one, or it makes us sick, number two. So we have to get away from, you know, I'm getting off on, I don't know if you want me to go down this path, but, you know, industrial farming is really destroying not only our earth, but it's destroying our internal biome, you know, our gut biome. So there's really no win at all. We have to go back to small farms and sustainable agriculture.
Yeah, it really does feel like we're at a crossroads with that, because you know, we've got a lot of people on this planet now, and everybody needs to eat something, unless you're a breatharian, I guess. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of gotten into this, you know, industrial mechanical practice where we stop really seeing the food that we eat as a living thing and just as another object just to produce in the market and to sell to people. And
right,
you know, we've got millions of people in our own country who go hungry every day, which is just tragic, and people that live in food deserts who are in, you know, less than ideal economic circumstances, and they don't even have a grocery store anywhere near them, you know, for whatever reasons. So
they have like a little corner, you know, market.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe they're lucky to have a bodega or something. Yeah. So it's, you know, and that's just the food aspect, let alone housing, you know, economic well-being. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think, you know, if something good came out of the whole pandemic thing, it was, we can't really ignore this stuff anymore. You know, people are in real desperate straits, and
we
really need to make some changes happen yesterday, or, you know, we're really going to start suffering the consequences. And I think that's what's happening. So I think, you know, I want to be optimistic and feel like people are getting the message, and the people that have some power and ability to really help make some changes are starting to do that. I also don't want to be a Pollyanna and not understand how much resistance there is from people who don't want to give up power or don't want to share power and are really comfortable, you know, with all the suffering that's going on because they're not experiencing it directly. You know, those are the people that, you know, sometimes shamanically I really want to reach, you know, and just kind of rattle their cage a bit and say, hey, you know, why are you doing this? You know, what's this?
What's
the outcome going to be if you're ignoring all of the suffering that's going on here and contributing to it? It's not gonna end well for anybody, you know.
Right. So. Yeah. One of the most radical things I think people can do right now is to find a way to have a garden. And, you know, maybe it's on a rooftop, maybe it's a community garden if you don't have land to do it, you're on your own. or maybe it's in your, you know, dig up your lawn. But just growing your own food is such a powerful step. And I think it was during World War II when people had their gardens. What was the name of that show that came out of PBS in Boston? The garden show, it was named after that, where everyone realized that they just needed to grow their own food, you know, because they couldn't get what they wanted in the grocery store anymore. So they all went out and they did that. And
Victory Gardens.
I know,
that kind of thing.
Victory Gardens, thank you. And I know that, you know, I feel some of that same angst about people that I can't reach right now that I know are really suffering. So I always have to come back to, what can I do? You know, I can give money to organizations that support them, and I can also be very, very connected to the community I live with, get to know my neighbors, get to know the soil in my yard, and grow plants and eat them. You know? So, and support my local farmers, and that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, those are really powerful things within, you know, just about everybody's grasp, you know, even if you're an urban dweller, you know, you've got a patch of sunlight for part of the day, you can grow something in a container that will sustain you. You know, I know plenty of people who don't have access to a real garden, but they can grow things, and that makes a big difference, you know. I mean, it made a big difference to me when I was younger and moving around a lot, just to have some houseplants that I took with me wherever we went. And they were, you know, even back then, they were my friends as much as my pets and animals were. So, yeah, definitely makes an impact. Well, I think we're going to is there anything else we haven't – I know we've had a lot of different topics brought up tonight, which has been really great, Elida. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention that we haven't covered yet or anything? Or
I think the one last thought I'd like to leave people with, and I already spoke it, but I just want to reiterate it, is hold a vision for a world that's sustainable for all. Just hold that vision.
Yeah, visioning is so powerful, right? You know, like you said, being both of you guys talked about your parking methodology and how your perspective shifts depending on your attitude and your mood. And, you know, if everybody takes some time, you know, from their day or their week to just send positive thoughts out there, you know, they do make a difference. They get heard and they get acted upon. It's the same kind of energy principle behind all sorts of things. So I think that's valuable for sure. And I think that, you know, alongside with that, you end up cultivating an attitude of gratitude too, because you realize, like you were talking about earlier, Elida, how much is really given to us and how supported we are, even when we don't feel it, it's still there. So pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, so how about you, Elida, share your contact info for our listeners again, just so they can get that down and find out about all the good things that you're doing in your book and everything.
Okay, so the best website is elidabirch.com, ElidaBirch. And the other website's the cocreationhandbook.com.
Nice. And then you said you had a class coming up tomorrow. Is that right? Okay,
yeah,
take advantage
there's
of.
A master class called The Shamanic Craft of Co-Creation, and that you can find that on my website, elidabirch.com. You can sign up for it. If you can't make it live, then a replay will be sent to you.
Perfect.
So there's no reason not to sign up.
Exactly. All right. Great. Okay, Michael, what's the best way for listeners to get a hold of you for healing work?
You can can go to my website at michaeljespinoza.com, and you can book a session there for either healing or reading session, or you can call me at 562-457-0457. How about you, Lawrence?
Phone number is 541-344-7534. And my email is givingtree@earthlink.net. Facebook is Giving Tree Farm Herbs. And my website is givingtreefarm.com. Do we have any guests next week, Michael? What's happening on the show next week? Do you know?
Next week, we're just going to go to the phones and take some calls.
Okay, very good. Well, and to make sure you get a chance to be one of those callers, follow us on Blog Talk so you never miss a show and you know what's coming up. That's a great way to stay connected to the Psychic Funhouse and to Michael and myself and our wonderful guests. And speaking of wonderful guests, I just want to thank Elida Birch for coming on tonight and blessing us with her and intelligent presence. All that she had to say was really wonderful. Yeah.
And thank you both.
Thank you so much, Elida.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I hope you'll come on again, and I hope our listeners get a chance to connect with you directly. You have so much to offer, and you're doing so much good work. It's a really great privilege to know that you're out there doing all these really wonderful things. So thanks again for all that. All right. Well, on behalf of everybody here at the Psychic Funhouse, this is Lawrence Birch signing off for now. Come and see us again. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening, and be sure to follow us on blogtalkradio.com.